Court calls United States v. Watson.
May it please the court, Major Jeff Lieberman for the appellant, time first class Alexander Watson. Court's permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
The briefs have presented this court with two different fraudulent enlistment rules. First, the absolute bar to enlistment rule, and second, the initially disqualified and we need a waiver to enlist rule. Regardless of the rule that this court applies, though, the appellant's plea is improper. And I would set up the argument in this way. First, under the absolute bar to enlistment rule, the appellant's plea is improper because that's just not the case we have here. The misrepresentation that the appellant made was not an absolute bar to his enlistment. It was waivable. And second, under the initially disqualified and we need a waiver to enlist rule, the appellant's plea is improper because he set up matters inconsistent with the plea that the military judge failed to resolve.
Just to be clear, is it necessary to determine whether someone, what the ultimate result would be? Isn't the issue under element three whether it was obtained or procured?
The way we interpret the statute, Your Honor, is that it's the ultimate outcome. And that goes back to this court's, at least the thread, the common thread running through this court's decisions in Holbrook and Danley, as well as the service court's decisions in Stevens and Lloyd. That it was the ultimate outcome and not this.
Even so, if the process is one of waiver, you're saying it's only applicable if the substance would have prohibited it versus the process that the military goes through.
Yes, Your Honor, because the very purpose of the statute is not simply to punish those who misrepresented themselves during the enlistment process, but rather to punish those who receive pain allowances, which I think is often lost. So those who receive pain allowances from the government that they otherwise were not entitled to receive, would never have received under any circumstances.
Counsel, do you have any general idea of how many conditions there are that are an absolute bar to enlistment? Do you think it's a large group, a small group? Do you even know of any? Name one absolute bar to enlistment.
Well, if we look at the Marine Corps, what they use, which is the Military Procurement Processing Manual, blindness would be one, Your Honor.
Okay, so under blindness, someone who is physically infirm, how would they have been able, we would have jurisdiction of them under Article 2? What about insanity? Is that an absolute bar?
Generally, yes, Your Honor.
And under Article 2, could we even prosecute them?
No, Your Honor, and we obviously point that out in our reply brief, that we recognize that if the court applies this absolute bar rule, that it's not going to have jurisdiction over there's going to be jurisdictional issues.
And just in terms of absolute bar, looking at the actual text of the actual statute, where in the actual statute is there anything that requires an absolute bar? As opposed to a procures by knowingly false representation?
It doesn't, Your Honor. We see this absolute bar language, or at least the bar language, from the court's holdings in Holbrook and in the service courts in Stevens and Lloyd, and then this court's again in Danley. That's where it comes from. But it really makes sense, although it would be a big change to the reach of Article 83, and we recognize that. But it makes sense to apply that rule under the statute, because again, as this court is well aware, I don't recall the exact date, but the pain allowances element wasn't always in Article 83. As Colonel Whitford discusses in his treatise, at that time, without it, he believed that there wouldn't be jurisdiction. So when it's added, that's really what Congress wanted to reach. Is those who receive pain allowances from the government, had they been truthful, they never would have received those.
And isn't that this case?
No, Your Honor, because we don't know whether or not he had been truthful, whether he would have been given pain allowances.
This is a providency case,
yes,
is it not? Yeah, okay. What does the potential of waiver have to do with that? He stipulated that his lie got him enlisted. The judge found that his lie got him enlisted. End of case.
And there's certainly no doubt from the province inquiry, is there, that he lied because he thought that if he told the truth that he wouldn't be enlisted?
No, Your Honor, there's no doubt about that. And that really brings me back...
And he got pay and allowances.
Yes, Your Honor. And that does, I think, bring me back to really where the strength of our argument is. Because to us, it really is not that relevant as to which rule the court applies. Because in our view, regardless of the rule it applies, the police improper. And as this court said in Avenette, certainly here, all of the elements were met. The problem was this inconsistency when it begins in the stipulation of fact. This court just said that Goodman was an important part of the contextual analysis of a guilty plea and whether it's proven or not. And the point the big thing he says is, I don't know, or my misrepresentation could have potentially disqualified me from enlisting. And the point here is this is inconsistent because it's not that he could have been disqualified, it's that he was initially disqualified. And he needed a waiver to enlist. And the military judge fails to resolve this inconsistency because the operative question he asks is, do you believe that, had you been truthful, that may have impacted your ability to join the Marine Corps? And again, the point is not whether it may have. It did. It disqualified him. Had he been truthful, he would have initially been disqualified and needed the waiver to enlist. And the military judge just doesn't ask that question. And maybe... It's understandable.
Now, you just said that the elements were met. Is that correct?
They were met, Your Honor. Initially. I mean, it's all there.
So your problem is, in some manner, you're really arguing matter inconsistent?
It's the inconsistency, yes, Your Honor. And because he really ends with, this is where they really end.
But is it your view that it was obtained or procured by a false representation because it was obtained without a waiver?
It was certainly obtained without a waiver, yes, Your Honor.
And why didn't he admit to that in paragraph 12 of the stipulation, paragraph 15 of the stipulation, and in the dialogue with the military judge on page JA-23?
He does admit it, Your Honor. It's all there.
So now I'm confused as to why you're there.
Well, because it was there. I mean, I think he met all of the elements initially. If we're arguing under the second rule, the initially disqualified needed...
Why don't we just argue under the element three rather than invent these new rules? Why don't we just say, was it or was it not obtained by a false representation? And it seems like it was obtained without a process of waiver, which is a false representation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Both sides agree that you need a waiver.
Right, Your Honor. Because then we have the inconsistency. I mean, that's
where's the inconsistency?
If you go to the stipulation of fact initially, Your Honor, which is JA at 36.
Right.
He says in paragraph 15, I believe my enlistment was procured by knowingly concealing the fact that I had been in a mental health facility when I was 13 years old. That's powerful language against it. Then he continues, very next sentence, I believe that this was important information that could have potentially disqualified me from enlisting in the Marine Corps, depending on the doctors.
That's why they have a waiver process.
Yes,
because
Your
it could have. And so you do the waiver and you figure out whether it would have.
And the reason this whole case is really about the care inquiry, Your Honor, is that it's not clear during the province inquiry which aspect we're talking about. That is, are we talking about you were ultimately disqualified, or are we talking about you were initially disqualified and needed this waiver? It's not clear.
Does it matter? Can't the judge, you got this waiver hanging out there somewhere. The guy has stipulated to lying to obtain enlistment in the Marine Corps. He has stipulated that. He has stipulated to the fact that his lie procured him enlistment and that he received pay and allowances and all the rest of that. Where's the inconsistency? Why can't the judge, on the strength of that, find provident plea?
We could, Your Honor, but it would just be, it would go against this court's prior precedence where it finds that despite the fact that all of the elements have been met and the military judge properly listed the facts to support the plea, some inconsistency is raised, however small, but an inconsistency that the military judge does not resolve. This court has been vigilant, quoting Article 45, against protecting against irregular and inconsistent pleas, despite the fact that it may seem on the record that the appellant is obviously guilty. We're not going to dispense with the actual trial just because he is. We're going to require, even though very technical, and this is a very legal, purely legal argument, we're going to require the military judge to go through these steps because the guilty plea is not just a formality. During a guilty plea, the accused gives up extremely important rights, and the only thing left to be determined is his sentence. So we require that we make sure that they're not...
I think what I'm really saying is that I question whether he's set up mad or inconsistent.
And we understand, Your Honor. I think in the fact that there is a discussion over it, it's probably not as obvious in some other cases might be, but our argument that it is. And that there was confusion as to what he needed to say to plead guilty, whether it mattered or not that he was initially disqualified or would have ultimately been disqualified.
Well, you're not saying he wasn't ultimately disqualified, are you? Minus a waiver.
No, I'm not saying.
Okay.
That. No, you're
right. So,
okay.
I mean, in the absence of a waiver, he's ultimately disqualified. I mean, it's
yes.
A disqualification absent a waiver.
We agree with that, Your Honor.
And he didn't get a waiver.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think that really... It's a good way to put it, Your Honor, for the government. But, really, we need to flip it upside down, I think, Your Honor, look at it from a different perspective, which is what the statute means. It's not that he was disqualified without a waiver, but what the statute means to attack is conduct where you receive paying allowances that had you been truthful... You would not have gotten.
So, counsel, what you've done is you've telescoped your two arguments into one. That is, originally you said, well, there are two different ways to look at the case. One is that there's an absolute disqualification, and the other is that there's a potential disqualification.
Yes, sir.
But you've really brought them together and said it's only improvident because there would be an absolute disqualification. Otherwise, it would seem that you've conceded that it's not improvident. That is, if it's a potential disqualification, he says this could have disqualified me, then there's nothing inconsistent there.
I would disagree with Your Honor for this reason. I think I can see how I blurred it, but when I'm talking about the congressional intent and the reasons for it, I'm really talking about why the absolute bar rule should be applied by this court. So it's obvious if the absolute bar rule should be applied, then the plea is improper. So
if we don't apply the absolute bar rule, though, where's the inconsistency if he says, well, it may have or could have disqualified me? Isn't that consistent with the non-absolute bar theory?
No, Your Honor, because then we're looking at whether we're talking about ultimately. Our argument is that he needed to say during the province interview,
But ultimately is your absolute bar.
Oh, I see your point, Your Honor.
That's why I see in the end the two arguments come together, because if you don't make that argument, and I understand that argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
That you are absolutely barred, that's the same as saying you're ultimately barred by an initial.
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with Your Honor, but if I could then address the initially disqualified rule and why the plea is still improvident there, I think the big question then is where's the inconsistency? It's really our argument there is brief. It's that when he says, I believe that this is important information that could have potentially disqualified me, argument is that what he's talking about there is initially, that is he, and what he needed to say was that it did disqualify me, and now I need a waiver. And the military judge doesn't.
Does he have to say that when he just said, I lied and it got me enlisted?
I think that's really what sets it up, Your Honor. We're not here because I'd be arguing other reasons the plea was improvident if he didn't say that. That's the, it's purely a legal and argument that the plea was inconsistent, or there was an inconsistency set up because of that statement. I mean, that's really it.
And even if the absolute bar rule applies, is this really improvident, given what he said, given what took place?
If the
given that he admitted to lying, admitted that the lie procured his enlistment, that he received pay and allowances.
Even if
the absolute bar rule applies, does it matter?
Yes, Your Honor, because now you're looking for the statute.
Yeah.
Under this, did he obtain his own enlistment or appointment in armed forces? I just don't know.
You know, 83 doesn't say if you, you know, those who sidestep a waiver.
Right.
It
yes,
says
sir.
He who does this violate, you know, shall be punished as a court martial may prescribe. And that's what he did. That's what he admitted to doing.
Yes, Your Honor. And the genesis of our argument there really starts with Colonel Winthrop in 1886, and this court's Danley and Holbrooklyn, which says what this means, what Article 83 means, is that but for the misrepresentation, he would have been rejected. And we take that to mean the absolute aspect. But
well, let's take that absolute bar rule. What is absolutely barred by law in terms of enlistment? That is, what can't be waived by the Secretary of the Navy or the Secretary of Defense?
You might, I only briefly went into that research, Your Honor, and I think the one that always pops into my head is the blindness is a big one.
Doesn't the statute say insanity?
Insanity, yes, Your Honor.
Underage?
Yes, Your Honor.
So short of that, then those would be the only three conditions under your theory that Article 83 would apply, because everything else can be waived.
Well, this court has said whether it's material or not, you look to the service court's regulations, and at least the manual the military, the Marine Corps uses, has permanently disqualifying.
Under what theory can the manual of the Marine Corps deprive the Secretary of the Navy or the Secretary of Defense of waiver authority?
I don't know of any, Your Honor.
I don't know of any either.
And I understand that what we ask this court to do will bring about some other issues that need to be worked out. But when this court said in Holbrook that we look to the service courts to determine whether or not something's material or not, we took that to mean that you can also look in applying whether or not something is waivable or not. And it should look to determine what they do to determine whether or not there's a fraudulent enlistment. With that said, if there are no further questions, that will conclude my argument.
Thank you, counsel.
Chief Judge Baker, may it please the court, I'm Catherine Robert Ecker on behalf of the government. Should this court adopt the appellant's position regarding the elements of the offense that would eviscerate Article 83 as a means to prosecute those who lie to gain entry into the armed forces? The government respectfully requests that this court construe Article 83 to merely require a lie about a fact that in the ordinary course of circumstances, that is absent the service waiving their qualifications, the bar enlistment.
Do we need to get there?
Well,
can we decide this thing? Is this legally sufficient under the but-for test?
Well, the but-for test, Your Honor, frankly, that's irrelevant. It's procurement. We can talk about but-for all we want, but what the statute says is did you procure enlistment through the lie? Procure just means did you induce the service to let you in? And what he talks about in the plea colloquy is how the military relied on his answers.
So basically, what you're saying is the service courts missed the point in these early cases?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And frankly, if we actually get into those cases and look at what they talked about, the but-for stuff was not at all relevant to their holding, Your Honor. If you look at the two service court cases, Stevens and Lloyd, that appellant cites to, Stevens, the holding was that the law officer failed to actually provide an instruction to the members about that accused mental capacity. The stuff about Article 83 is completely dicta. In Lloyd, you have the lie was about prior military service, which, as the court talked about, is not a bar to enlistment at all. In that case, the accused in prior Army service was trying to enlist in the Navy, and the recruiter says to him, look, just don't say that you're in the Army, and this way you can actually ship off to boot camp this evening. Well, then later, they come back and they prosecute this guy for fraudulent enlistment. The court says, well, he didn't actually lie about something that was a disqualifier. I mean, he lied about being in the Army, and he didn't really lie because it wasn't deliberate. He did what the recruiter told him to do. So the discussions in those cases should not bear upon this court's ruling as to what the elements.
Is that the government's position that if a recruiter tells an enlists a potential enlistee to say something that's not a lie on the part of the enlistee?
Well, I think it depends, Your Honor. I don't think that's a, to be
if
clear.
If it was material, would that government's position be, well, the recruiter told him to say it, so I guess we can't prosecute and we'll concede error and you should reverse the conviction?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. To be clear, no, that's not the government's position. But I think in that case, the fact was not a disqualifier at all. That's what really we're getting at, Your Honor. Turning to the province of the plea, appellant fails to demonstrate a substantial basis of the fact to set aside the plea because the factual circumstances of the plea colloquy objectively support the plea. He admitted all the elements of the offense, both in the stipulation and in the plea colloquy. Here, for this court, construing the third element, there's not only no inconsistency, but what he says is exactly what he could possibly know. He says, I sat down with my counsel, I reviewed the order, I now know that I would have needed a waiver. At the time of the lie, I thought that this was a fact that would prevent me from getting in. The accused in these cases is not going to be able to sit down and say with 100% certainty, I know what the Marine Corps would have done. He should do exactly what he did in this case. He sits down with his counsel and looks at the regulation, and he says, exactly, I was disqualified absent waiver.
Well, and under Holbrook, does he need to have known?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
And under Holbrook, does he need to have known?
Exactly, Your Honor. He doesn't, and that's really the key. As this court discussed in Holbrook, this offense is not from the perspective of the accused. It's from the perspective of the service. Briefly, Your Honors, just want to reiterate the crux of element C is on page 20.
Does that have to do with what the accused knew for certain or what the accused's approach was? That is, if a person tells a lie about something regarding military service, and they have no idea that it's a disqualifying factor. Is that an offense under Article 83? There are many aspects of service life that a civilian might not know about. For example, we just had a discussion of prior service. Sometimes prior service is disqualifying, sometimes it isn't. So if a person is asked whether they previously served in the military and they falsely state that, but they've done it for whatever reason, not to procure an enlistment. Is that an offense?
Your Honor, I think the only requirement at the time of the lie is that he knows he's lying about relevant fact.
But if he doesn't know that it's relevant, then is it an offense?
Well, there could be intent problems, Your Honor. I think his only he needs to know he's lying about a fact because the recruiter's asking. Now, during a plea colloquy, I think he has to say, now I know it's a relevant fact. But at the time, he only needs to lie. But then the judge would have to ask him, you know, now that you're sitting here before me and you understand the elements of the offense, do you believe that you actually did lie about something that the service uses to determine whether they should admit you? Briefly, Your Honor, just on page 23, appellant admits that he believed his recruiter lied on the information that he provided in both orally and writing. Thus, he procured his enlistment through his lie. If there are no further questions on this, on either of the issues, that concludes the government's argument, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal, please.
Your Honor, unless there are questions, we have no further rebuttal, or any rebuttal, excuse me.
Any further or otherwise? Any questions up here? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess until tomorrow morning. Thank you.
We're staying in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow.